to all the hackers and the crackers.
To the hackers and the crackers.
I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. Your CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones? And NASDAQ, leave you flat on your back? Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RANs, ZIPs, SIPs. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
Microsoft is spending more and more money these days on security, and with good reason. The world's biggest computer company has suffered a string of attacks from hackers. The company knows that its systems became vulnerable. Its profits plummet. So let's meet Microsoft's enemy. Our North American business correspondent, Steve Evans, has been talking to the hackers.
Deep in the recesses of cyberspace, a great intellectual battle is underway. Microsoft versus hackers, bent on breaching its computer system. It's a very high-stakes chess game that even threatens Microsoft's future. Hackers like Porkchop, as he's known, say it's about finding defects to alert the company before others wreak havoc.
We're the type of people who find those problems in the first place. We let Microsoft know before we tell anybody else.
You're presenting it as though you're generous to Microsoft, that you're helping Microsoft by finding the gaps in their system. Microsoft, I suspect, would say that you're trying to bring them down, maybe destroy them.
We don't actually tell people how to damage it until Microsoft has had a very generous amount of time to fix the problems. It's been months between the discovery of a bug and the release of a bug to the public, whenever Microsoft doesn't pay attention to it.
At a gathering of hackers in New York, run by Hackers on Planet Earth, H-O-P-E, Hope, there's a star turn. Kevin Mitnick was jailed for hacking into company and government computers just for the thrill.
I guess we could all sum it up that it was sheer entertainment. Once I was able to get control of the system, it gave me a feeling of accomplishment. It was kind of like picking a lock. Not because you want to get to the other side to steal anything or to cause any harm, but just the thrill of being able to pick it.
And what did you get into?
A lot of different phone companies, Motorola, Fujitsu, NEC, Sun Microsystems, IBM.
The other thing you got into was jail.
That's true. I ended up serving about 5 years in custody. I was the government poster boy. I was like held in solitary confinement because a prosecutor had told a judge that I could start a nuclear war by whistling into a telephone.
Was it true? Could you have started a nuclear war?
Of course not.
There are noises that are used by hackers for far less dangerous, though still illegal, reasons. Rich the Rebel is a phone freak, someone who breaches phone systems.
When you make a phone call, you put a quarter into a phone and it makes a sound, and that tells the phone company that you put in a quarter, and the sound sounds like this. The automated system will hear that and they'll think that a quarter is being put into the phone.
Isn't that theft?
Yeah, I guess it is.
For many hackers, it's a naive game. They seem to have odd personalities, almost childlike. Bernadette Schell of the University of Ontario has studied hundreds of them. Many hackers come from broken families, she found, and lack trust in others.
There seemed to be a history in early childhood of interpersonal difficulty, and that had a long-term impact on how they were feeling about others in terms of relationship. Essentially, what they did was they escaped creatively into the computer, so that's where they found solace. And they continued into adulthood to communicate with others through the net rather than through face-to-face. A small minority would be dangerous, but the vast majority would be of extreme positive use to businesses and to society, particularly as they were approaching age 30.
Which is fine. But how should we treat hackers before they reach that age of useful maturity?
No answer to that. Steve Evans reporting from New York.
Welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 65, coming to you on October 5th, 2004. I am Stank Dog, representing the Digital Dog Pound, reporting from parts unknown. And also representing the Digital Dog Pound with me this evening is a blast from the past, a voice you have heard many times in the past. Been kind of taking care of business lately, have you?
Just a little.
Voodoo Hal, one of our esteemed members of DDP, back in action. And looking very forward to doing the show tonight. I am, that is, doing the show with you. I don't look forward to any of the other shows. I only look forward to this doing this show with you tonight.
Bet you say that to all the guys.
Oh, well, yeah, well, you know, what can I say? I'm easy.
Hey, I didn't mention this before the show, but I forgot about this.
Oh, great.
The first time I was ever in, my first show that I was ever on during season one involved a beautiful story. Maybe it was the second. Anyway, all I've got to say is Deadly Halon.
What was that Deadly Halon? You broke up on me there.
Deadly Halon.
Deadly Halon, yeah. That was also on the anniversary episode. I guess that's the most famous story we ever had on the show. Classic episode there.
I'd bring it up since this is my first season two appearance.
Is it really? Yeah, I guess it is. It's been, man, kind of temporarily unplugged there, didn't you?
Yeah.
Had to take
permanently unplugged and just managed to find my way back.
Well, we're glad to have you back. Why don't we do some, let's take care of some housekeeping. We'll get you right back in the flow of things, because you did several. It's not like you're a noob to this or anything. You know, you did quite a few episodes of this. Let's see, we still got that. We haven't changed a single bit since season one, so don't worry. I don't know if that's good or bad. We'll see.
Yeah, I thought I was promised half-naked women for season two. What was up with that?
They never arrived?
Nope, never saw them.
You know what? I tell you what, we'll make that happen at Freaknik. How about that?
All right, I'm game.
There we go. Freaknik, baby. Bring on the freaks. Okay, yeah, let's do a little housekeeping here. Let's take care of a couple things. First of all, quick little note, I screwed up some, at least one, I think a couple possibly previous episodes of the show. I think I fixed all the downloadable versions, but a couple of them I streamed, where I forgot to insert the email theme music into the show. So, I fixed a couple of them on the downloadable version. I missed one. That shout out to everybody in IRC. Some people in IRC checked them for me, and I appreciate that. I went through and redid the episodes that were messed up. So go check out radio.binrev.com. These would have been pretty recent. I think 63 was really the only one that needed to be redone this time. Like I said, I caught the other ones myself before I uploaded them. So I think 63 is really the only one. Unless you really like to hear me, you know, singing and mumbling or whatever it is that I was doing when I announced the theme music. I kind of just kind of do a little filler there because I usually edit it afterwards and put the theme in. By the way, I don't know about editing this one because we're actually recording on Tuesday, November the 5th. So this is not a show that was recorded a day or 2 days before. We are actually coming to you on Tuesday. I can say that as a matter of fact. What else do we have here? I also have Old School Freak back up as well. Things are coming back. I love it when a plan comes together. Name that TV show. That was from your generation. Don't give me any old man jokes here.
I was going to go with Bonanza, but hell, I have no idea.
That was the A-Team, man.
That was it during my age.
Oh, what?
I was watching Sesame Street when the A-Team was on.
Maybe I am old. Oh, my God. Oh, I don't want to do the show anymore. I don't want to live anymore. Thank you for bringing me down. Holy crap, I'm old. Man. Well, anyway, old references aside, I know some of my dogs out there will get that reference. I know I'm not the only one that remembers the A-Team. You don't remember Mr. T?
I remember him with his bling bling.
Oh, the king of bling.
Digital bling.
The king of bling. He made bling famous. He was the original blinger. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, it's late. What can I tell you? Old School Freak. The site is back up. We announced that before. We will be updating it soon, okay? We put it back up. We made a couple changes to it right away. Cleared up a couple things. And We lost some things like email addresses, email forwarders, and things like that, unfortunately. And we're not going to be replacing those in the short-term future. I don't know the long-term future exactly of the email, but the long-term future of the site seems to be fine. So we do have some updates. I have some T-files to upload to that site. I have some photos and things like that. So, yeah, people that have sent in some stuff, I do have it. I just haven't gotten around to updating it. And, frankly, actually, when I say I'm probably not going to be the one updating and maintaining that site. I just got it up and running, with permission, of course, and, we're actually just kind of kicking around how we're going to take care of it, how we're going to maintain it, and who's going to maintain it and take that responsibility, et cetera, et cetera. So, keep an eye out for that, but it is back. Probably going to be... Some of the site's going to change. Some of the layout's going to change a little bit. For the most part, it's going to look and feel the same, but we just might rotate a few of the files off to other more appropriate sites, kind of clean up some things, and kind of basically reemphasize technology, privacy, and freedom, which is what the site's always been about. And we're kind of really reemphasize that a lot with the site. So we'll do some cleanup, but again, everything that's ever been on there is, of course, public domain, and that's something Duel was always very, very big on. You know, he wanted the community to have this, even if we just put it back up and never touched it again. You know, it's out there. People are welcome to do with this stuff what they want. We might just clean it up for cosmetic purposes and for ease of navigation. So feel free to have and help yourself to anything that's on there, as usual. Now, let's play a little email theme music.
Radio@binred.com.
Okay. First email is from XLogic. Speaking of Old School Freak, this is a longtime friend of not only Binary Revolution Radio, but RFA as well, Radio Freak America. So he writes in to say, hey, I just launched phx2600.com. That's PHX Phoenix, phx2600.com, and I put up a video of me with the glove at a 2600 meeting along with other videos. Our last meeting, and when the glove, by the way, for people who don't remember, XLogic had made a stun glove, a shocking glove, a shock glove, and the video is up at, again, phx2600.com. Very cool, and we talked about that on RFA quite a while back. And the Kevin Rose incident, and we were not going to relive that one. You know how much we all love that. Let's see, where was I? I'm just butchering the show tonight. Back into the email, he says, our last meeting was very interesting since we had a special agent from the FBI here. It was very informative. And that was an invited guest, by the way. Don't read anything into that. They asked him to come before you freak out. It was very informative. He said that the MPAA and RIAA were zero priority on their list. Nice to hear that. He also asked about HPR, being a listener to RFA and BinRev on his spare time for entertainment, I might add. It's just nice to think that it's not completely an us-versus-them thing. After all, the feds are people just like us. I would like to think, well, maybe not just like us, but I would like to think that we all have a common goal of making things better for the common good. What I like about this is that we have real feds listening to real hackers. Also, there was mention in a few issues back of 2600 that the FBI here in Phoenix was doing a presentation on cybercrime, and they addressed 2600 at the meeting. Well, I'm not sure if I should drop the name.
I don't think so.
I'm going to just skip it just to play safe, even though I guess it was in the meeting. Yeah, just to play safe, he mentions the officer's name, and just to play safe, I'm not going to mention it because I don't know how he feels. But the Fed that was at the meeting was one that held that meeting, referred to in 2600, which is interesting. Okay. Oh, and one more thing, Godel Escher Bach by Douglas R. Hofstadter is definitely a worthy read. It is a big book, though, one I would tend to read slowly. I think it would blow your mind, though. By the way, my avatar on BinRev is actually a picture of Godel, just in case anybody was wondering. Okay, thank you, Logic, X-Logic, X-Logic, X. We've recalled you so many things on the show in the past. But Logic, I think, is the way he likes to refer to it. Yeah, I think it's really cool that the feds show up. To me, you know, I've always been an out in the open. My docs are out there. I don't hide that kind of stuff. And I think you feel the same way about the doc situation, right?
I lost you there. What?
I say there. Oh, man, I was taking a drink. I say, you feel the same way as I do about, you know, I don't hide my docs very, very much. It's not such a big deal to me. I don't really, you know. So the fact that a Fed would come to my meeting, if you knew that a Fed was invited to your local meeting, would that stop you from going? Would you not go because a Fed's there?
Not at all. I mean, I've met a couple of NITSI agents, and I thought, I mean, they were nice, obviously, for reasons that we won't discuss. They were there, but, I mean, they were more than nice. I thought they were pretty cool people. Well, and the forensics guys were kind of scary, but that's another story.
Yeah, see, I you know what? My whole thing is, you know, it's a public meeting. Everybody's invited to attend. No exclusions. That includes the feds. If they want to come by and listen, that's fine. Now, I guess...
I think, you know, Kevin Rowe should be banned, though.
Well, yeah, okay, I'm sorry. One, there's, you know, there's a couple exceptions. I guess I should take that back. Yeah, let's start a big feud. Let's start
a big... I'm kidding. I watch the Screensavers. I'm a geek.
Yeah,
Along with Kevin and The Broken.
Uh-huh.
Just a good target. I mean,
Did you see the Stripe Snoop episode recently? As a matter of fact, I'll give a little shout-outs here early here to Acidus on a recent episode of the Screensavers. Kevin Rose presented, gave a presentation on Stripe Snoop, which, of course, we had Acidus on the show to talk about a cool project. He presented it at the HOPE conference that he had an article in 2600 that he's been working on for a long time. And it's very cool that Kevin made a presentation on that on the Screensavers. And, you know, it was really, I'm sure it was just oversight that he forgot to mention Acidus's name anywhere. I'm sure that was pure accident. So, you know what, Acidus, I'll mention your name. Big shouts out from Stank Dog for whatever that's worth. I know I'm not Kevin Rose getting out there to all the people watching G4 Tech TV, whatever the hell that thing is now.
For me, at least, I don't want to give a shout, but I do want to say thanks to Acidus. I thought it was a great... I probably just mutilated his name.
I think you actually kind of broke up there.
Okay, well, then I can hide it. Yeah, I pronounced it correctly. No, I mean, I thought it was a great article because me, I'm a software person, always have been.
Me too.
And I've got tons of stories of me trying to play with hardware and nearly blowing everything up because I had no idea what I was doing, but I thought it was a great article to read.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm a software guy. I would love to learn more hardware stuff. So, yeah, I thought it was very cool and very well written. And, yeah, we've talked about it in the past. So, anyway, let's see about the went off on a tangent there on Kevin Rose. Thanks for drawing me out there. That's what we do. That's what we need, to make enemies with a big media icon, Kevin Rose. Anyway, let me get back to the letter here. He mentioned in there, I guess it's kind of a good point, really, that he says feds are people, too. That to me, that sounds like a T-shirt slogan. We should market shirts that says feds are people, too. And sell them to feds. They probably make some money.
I could make one and wear it to Freaknik for you.
Ooh, there we go. Spot the Fed. They don't have that at Freaknik, though, do they?
I don't know.
No, I don't think they have that there. Yeah, I would actually... I'm tempted to see if I can contact some local agents down here to come to a meeting. Got some other things I'm working on for some upcoming meetings as well, and I'll... When we get down to the show and tell stuff, when we get down to the hacking stories, the personal stories, I'll talk some more about that stuff. To me, it opens up a dialogue, and I think that's what's really cool. You open up a dialogue between you and the feds, and let them understand, you know, that we're not all what they seem to think we all are, for whatever that means. So I think that's kind of cool. So big props to them, and hey, hopefully he starts coming regularly. You know, it's cool that he came on an invite as a guest or whatever. I think it'd be cool if he started coming regularly. The more you go, the more you're exposed to it, the more he might actually get it and realize it's not, you know, not so bad, you know?
Yeah.
Actually pretty darn good sometimes, aren't we? We do good things. We do lots of good things.
Some of us do.
They don't, the good things don't make the headlines. They don't, that doesn't put asses in the seats. You know? They want the They want to sell the fear, the bad things.
Well, think about it. How many paper newspapers do you see where somebody's been murdered? Yeah, how many times does a birth make the front page?
Well, yeah, it's true. They put all the births in a special section in the back.
Yeah, but no one ever gets that far.
Yeah, right? Except the people that are involved in the birth, you know, they... It's basically just dedicated for them because no one else really, you know, knows them. Anyway. Let's see, where was I? Okay, another email from Kevin420. Kevin420 says, hey, who's the guy in the intro song? Okay, I'm actually joking, but are you aware of the way it sounds on episode 64? I downloaded it today, and the intro isn't the same. It's not the original version you usually play. It's a choppy version with weird editing. Anyways, I don't need to explain, just re-listen. Yes, you're absolutely correct, and it was intentional. I just felt like using a different mix that I'd made myself. I mixed the other version myself, too, cut it down to a nice minute or so intro. I just felt like using a different one, and I was curious as if anybody would even notice anyway. Obviously, somebody did. So, good catch. A lot of people jump into the stream in the middle of the show anyway and miss the opening theme, so... And I have another email here from someone who I'm not going to read their name because I'm not sure, but we'll just say real name withheld because we don't know, who says, Dear Mr. Stank, I ran across your radio show one day when I was at work. I worked for a school system and was working by myself cloning a lab. I did a search somewhere and found your show. Since then, I have been listening to the show, have ordered all your magazines, and watched Hack TV. Very cool. I would like to thank you in so many ways. I recently changed jobs, which I have a 45-minute commute in the Northern Virginia traffic. The first week, I tried in vain to find something I would like to listen to on the FM band. Well, yeah, you realize that was futile. I'm sure you realize that pretty quick, unless you don't like boy bands and slutty blonde chicks.
I think we're
all with NPR. Yeah. I then thought, why not get episodes of Ben Rev Radio and put them on a CD and play them in my car CD player that does MP3s? One night I did that, and for the past week I have been listening to nothing else but your radio show. I have learned a lot and have been entertained greatly. While listening to a few old shows, I noticed you mentioned Blacklisted 411 magazine. I remembered I had a few of their older magazines from 1998. A few times over the past years, I would do a search for them and found nothing. I visited their site from a link on yours and ordered a new subscription and a few back issues. Tonight, I dug up their old mags and also found one called Thud, the Hacker's Underground Digest, which appears to be put out by the same people as Blacklisted 411. Have you ever seen this one? While driving to and from work, I thought about myself, and I have always been a hacker ever since I was a kid. I would play with things and see how they worked. I remember getting in trouble because I took apart the phone. Oh, yeah. Everybody's... That's the first sign, right? Isn't that like the first sign that you know you're a hacker? I had a radio scanner when I was about 12, and I've listened to a lot of things and even messed with McDonald's, university security, mall security, ran license plates through the DMV on a police frequency with a modded 2M440 amateur radio. Since then, I have gotten a good job in computers and made a pretty good life. I owe all of what I have from curiosity and learning on my own. On another note, I was listening to the second edition Craptacular, that's the telephonic Craptacular, of course, and was a little surprised when you left in the DTMF tones when calling Bell South to cancel your DSL. When I got home, I hooked up my Universal M400 decoder and played back the tones. I was hoping you were not that stupid and really leave them in. I told my girlfriend what I was doing and said, if Stank left them in there, I'm going to call him. Keep up the good work. All right. First of all, this is a great letter, by the way. This is a really good letter. Thanks. Thank you for the support. You know, ordering the magazines, that is what allows us to keep putting out the radio show, pay for the bandwidth, I should say, to put out the radio show and the TV show and maintain the sites and all the other projects and stuff we do. So thank you very much for that. Thud, the Hacker's Underground Digest. Yes, I have heard of that. I have one issue of Thud. It's the only one I ever saw on the shelves. I think they might have released 3 or 4. I probably would have to contact Zachary. I might actually email and ask him some info about that. Maybe by the next show if I can get in touch with him. But yes, that is put out by the, or was put out by the same people. Do you remember that one, by the way?
Not I.
No, it was, Blacklisted was the first one, and it was black and white back then. And I remember Thud coming out being in color. And that was, I guess they both lasted about a year longer than that when Thud first came out. Like I said, there's 2, 3, maybe 4 episodes at the most, and then I think it disappeared. So I guess that's when they went through their troubles and kind of disappeared temporarily. And obviously they are back now. We've talked about them in the past. Blacklisted411.net, I believe. And, yeah, they did put out Thud back then. And I think I remember that they're going to try to bring Thud back out again. At least they were saying they would like to. I don't know if what the reality is. I don't know if the interest level, the success of Blacklisted is probably going to determine, you know, if they're going to bring something like that back. So whether it actually happens, I don't know. Yeah, taking apart the phone, that's the first sign. That's the first sign that, you know, there's always those events that happen in life that you realize that's what you were born to do. That's what you are. That's what you're. I mean, take apart the phone. Take apart the VCR. You know, I took apart the old VCRs. I could never put them back together. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, thank God! I thought I was the only one who possessed that positive talent of not giving a damn where the screws went.
I just wanted to see how it went together. I couldn't actually get it back. How it went together, I couldn't put it back together myself. Like you said, I was a software guy. I've always been a software guy. I've never been that much on hardware. I tried to put it back together. Don't get me wrong. I'm like, oh, I bet if I just replace this with that and change this to that, I can make it work better. Oh, it doesn't work at all anymore. Oops.
That's when the abundance of duct tape, because of living in the South, comes in handy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And barbed wire. Oh, anyway, what else? What else? And also, there's a positive thing here. I don't know. Let me go back and reread this because I thought this was a cool statement. Since then, I have gotten a good job in computers and made a pretty good life. I owe all of what I have from curiosity and learning on my own. So there's hope. Every hacker out there, that's a case. That's an example right there. Hackers are and can be and will be successful. They all will be successful. There's never going to be a true hacker that's not successful. It's just an innate ability we have to be good at things, you know? So, that's a very positive message. Now, about the DTMF tones and the Craptacular, I never got the phone call, and I'm sure he knows why. Again, back to the docs we were talking about earlier, my docs are public. You know, they're very easy to find. I've said that before. I don't hide from it, blah, blah, blah. I wouldn't have dropped them quite so easily by putting them in the Craptacular, but it's kind of cool that you looked for it. I hide a lot of little games and puzzles and stuff like that into the show. Anytime you hear DTMF tones, anytime you hear edits or stuff like that, there's usually some in-joke or there's a reference or there's a hint or some kind of little game on the site scattered in different places. There's still hidden things that not many people have found, if any. Sometimes people will find something that even I forgot that I put out there. So there's lots of hidden stuff. There's always something going on at VinRev. Sometimes more than others. Everybody unplugs at the same time and the wheels stop turning, but hey, you know how that goes. Now, boy, we have got a lot of emails. Let's see how we're doing. Man, we're really eating up the time here. Another email. We got one more email, and then we'll close it up. From Feeble. Feeble says, I was recently browsing the Hope5 website and found this file. And it's a URL, but it's bbchackers.mp3. If you go to thefifthhope.org, if you go to the Hope website, and look in the wiki, I believe it is, in the media section. But it's in other sites as well. And we're going to open the show. We actually did open the show with this. So you heard it at the beginning of the show. So we found this file of a radio cast from the BBC, and I think you'll agree with me on this media image. Hackers, as it were, is starting to get very outdated and is really starting to anger me. I'm doing good with the language, so I'm catching it now. Really starting to torque me off, I'll say that. And it seems to me, as hard as we try to make people understand why we do what we do, and the kind of ideas we hold are not reported as they should be, attitudes like the one displayed in this radio cast seem to stamp on all the good work you guys do and others like you. BBC, the British TV... If I remember right, you're a big supporter of the BBC, right?
Not I.
No? I thought you actually liked the BBC before.
Oh, I do. I just wouldn't consider myself a big supporter.
Okay.
I watch it, yes.
Oh, okay. All right.
BBC local news, oddly enough. Still not sure why, but it's kind of cool hearing what's going on in Northern Ireland.
Generally, they are a little bit less biased than... Well, I mean, it's hard to not be... Everybody's less biased than American news, but that could be a whole show in and of itself. Anyway, BBC, the British TV Corp, are widely known to report news as it is unlike the most dumbed-down U.S. media. The BBC and The Guardian are both nonprofit orgs, so they have no reason to make, say, shareholders or aspects of government look good. E.g., during the war, the U.S. media stopped showing pictures of things like the coffins of dead servicemen and were subject to a cutting down of the facts. Those types of actions weren't taken over here. My problem is why the British media and other media centers sees fit to report the facts on wars, government, pop culture, etc., but can't seem to manage it on this topic, information on the kind of ideas many people in the hacking community hold. I hope I read that. I kind of stumbled over that one a little bit. Utmost respect to BenRev Rant Radio and Default Radio. Oh, and Stank, more rants, please. It's good to hear people getting issues off their chest. Yeah, it would be interesting for me to do an all-rant show. I would probably collapse from blood rushing to my head and dehydration and heat stroke all at the same time if I tried to go an hour ranting. So that's kind of a dangerous proposition for me. Now, some of your topics here. Now, first of all, we played the BBC at the opening at the beginning of the show, so people know exactly what we're talking about. But there's a couple other comments here that I'm not quite sure I agree with. And again, jump in here if you want to, if you disagree or whatever. But you know, his example was carrying coffins. Let me read it again. During the war, the U.S. media stopped showing pictures of things like the coffins of dead servicemen. Cutting down the facts, and we're subject to a cutting down of the facts. To me, showing pictures of people carrying coffins, that's not really news or reporting to me. I mean, even the U.S. media, no media is hiding the fact that people are dying in this war. There's no doubt about that. Whether or not they show coffins and dead, that to me just crosses a line into gratuitous. I mean, do I really need to see the misfortune and the horrible scene and the gory details, quite frankly, of something like that? That's not really...
Do you really need to see it isn't the question.
Right.
It's does the average person... And I think the easy answer to that is yes. How many traffic jams have you been stuck in because of a wreck on the other side of the road, a bad wreck, and people just want to slowly drive by and stare?
Yeah, it's... showing, you know, just because they show something like that, I don't see how that it qualifies as better news reporting really at all. So I'm not sure about that example.
I think the omission of it, to me, is better news reporting, personally.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go that far, but...
Well...
Kind of, yeah. I kind of agree with that, but not... In this particular example, yes. In this particular example. There's just no need to show... Like a hostage situation. Do we really need to see those beheadings and stuff?
No.
It's terrible enough to know that they happen.
To make good entertainment, unfortunately, yes.
Well, to some people, unfortunately, yes. But you know what? It's a horrible thing, and I don't need to see it to feel bad and to feel, you know, terrible that something like that happens. But you know what? Let's just... This is a hacking show. Let's not get too caught up in the political aspect of it. I just wanted to say that, you know, sometimes, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say, you know, yes, our media is biased. That might not have been the best example, but, you know, take it for what it is. Now, back to the BBC and this particular clip. it is a shame to hear hackers reported in poor light, in poor things, poor ways. I don't really know. It's going to take a long time to change people's opinions on hackers. You know, and it's been tried in many different ways, and we've been over this on the show. We've beaten this horse to death. You know, the whole hacker versus cracker thing. That didn't go over very well. If anything, there's remnants of that now, where some people try to force those terms, and they're thinking they're doing the right thing, and they're just making it worse and more convoluted. And then you got the whole black hat, white hat thing. I like that one better, actually, because there are black hat hackers out there. You know, let's be honest, there are. There are white hat, there are gray hat. Most of us are gray hat, I think. Of course, you know, read Binary Revolution 2.1 for my opinions on that. But it's not an overnight process. It's going to take time, and it's going to take action. You know, actions always speak louder than words. Putting out this show each week, all the other shows that go out there and talk about what hacking really is and what it's about, going out and working on projects and positive things and giving to the community and stuff like that, action will help overcome some of that stuff, and it's slowly over time. So, yeah, we're fighting constantly to change people's beliefs, but it's definitely an uphill battle, definitely. Plus, you know, like I said, there are people that are using computers to do bad things that aren't even hackers, but they use a computer to do it, and they claim to be a hacker, or they do it in the name of hackers. You know, sometimes they get labeled as hackers, and they didn't even know it just because they used a computer. So that sets things back even further. So that's why, you know, that's why we call this the binary revolution. Revolutions take time. This is the beginning of a binary revolution, a taking back of the word hacker, taking back of the definition of the hacker and what a hacker represents. So we have only begun to fight. By the way, if we get into a fight at Freaknik, you got my back, right?
Of course.
Okay.
I'll throw down.
Oh, man. All right. I think let's close up the mailbag. I have one more here I might come back to later, but it's more of a review. And that's actually more like real content, so I'm going to hold off on that for a little bit. And let's jump into the personal hacking stories. So I'll go into my show and tell what I've been working on for the past, I had my 2600 meeting this past week, and we reminded everyone to go to your 2600 meeting before. So my 2600 meeting, I thought, went very, very well. Probably the best meeting, in my opinion, that we've ever had. We had three very good presentations. Well, I guess I should say two very good presentations. I don't know how mine went, so I'm not going to say mine was great. There were two other very good presentations. Someone I invited, actually, to come give a demonstration, and thank you very much to him for presenting El Diablo, coming to our meeting, and kind of developing a relationship, a cooperation, if you will, between our 2600 meeting and the semi-local DEF CON meeting. There's a DEF CON meeting further away from us in a different county, but we're kind of been talking and working together, kind of forge an alliance, if you will, a relationship, something like that, where we can maybe attend each other's meetings on occasion. Now, again, two different counties, it's quite a drive for a lot of the people, so I don't know that it's something that can happen regularly, but at least for presentation purposes, maybe we can show up at each other's meetings if we have presentations to kind of beef it up, help it out. Not a competition thing. There'll be a lot of crossover from the groups, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's very cool. I think these groups can coexist, you know. So I like to see that happen in more places myself. Now, besides that, some of the listeners might remember, gosh, it's been quite a few episodes ago, maybe 10 or more episodes ago, maybe not that many. Well, I mentioned on the air that I was having a problem with my KVM switch. And my keyboard video, I have one monitor, one keyboard, one mouse, and I'm trying to control multiple boxes. I try to free up some desk space by getting rid of all the extra monitors, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the problem I was running into with it was that I have a couple of Linux boxes on here. I have a Linux box. I have an X. I have, excuse me. I have two Linux boxes, an XP box, and a test box for whatever I feel like throwing on it at any given time. Well, the problem that I have is that when I switch over to the Linux boxes, the mouse just goes berserk. It just goes completely haywire. I can't control it on the screen, on the Linux boxes, that is. On Windows box, it'll work fine, but on the Linux boxes, the mouse just goes crazy. The cursor goes crazy, I should say. I cannot control it with the mouse. And any trying or attempts ends up, it's blindly clicking and moving and dragging, like things start disappearing and moving on the screen. So it basically comes down to a shutting down of the box. Or actually, I think I found out that restarting the X Windows environment will seem to fix it. Until, of course, I navigate away from it on the KVM switch again. So what I had theorized on the show and finally got around to doing this past week was that perhaps putting in a constant power supply to the KVM switch. The KVM switch does not require power. It actually gets its power through the keyboard port, the PS2 port, which I thought was interesting. So as long as one keyboard is plugged in from one of the systems, it's got power to run the box. Well, I thought maybe putting in a constant power supply plugged into the wall would allow me to keep a constant signal going to the hardware, because, you know, Linux is very much wants to communicate and pull the hardware. And I was thinking that maybe switching from one control to the other, going through my KVM controls, was causing it to lose communication and therefore get confused and choke. Well, it didn't help. Long story short, it did not work. Still acting the same way. I don't know what's going on. I have the power supply on there, the correct power supply, and it's still having the same thing. Now, again, like I said, restarting X seems to fix it, so I guess it's an X Windows issue of some sort. And I guess I'm going to have to look into it. If anybody, again, has had problems like this, please email me your advice and let me know what worked for you. I can tell you that the KVM switch is a Belkin, 4-port KVM, and I'm wondering now that maybe, is it possibly a driver? Because I'm using the Microsoft IntelliMouse Explorer, which is the laser mouse, and I've never had any problems using it on the Linux box directly, but going through this KVM switch, it doesn't seem to like it very much. So I'm not exactly sure. Maybe it is a USB by nature, and I've got an adapter turning it back to a PS2 port. Maybe there's some kind of translation that's going wrong, but that's really been my issue going for the last, well, however long it's been going on, for the last month or two. So I was very disappointed to find out that adding the power supply to it did not help or did not work. So, again, our 2600 meeting, I'm hoping we'll start having a lot more presentations more regularly. Again, I've got some guests in mind lined up, and maybe start building some cooperation with some of the other groups and some other security groups and user groups and stuff like that, and try to... I mean, our meeting was probably... Let me think. Our meeting was probably 20 or more people this month, which is definitely the biggest I've seen. I mean, there might have even been 25 or more people there at any given time. So that's very, very cool. So I'd like to see that continue. I hope it does, but I guess we'll find out next month. So yeah. So do you think that's probably the problem with the KVM switch?
I think so, yeah.
And what is that problem again?
It's probably just some form of problem in the X11 configuration settings.
Is it you think it's a driver issue with the IntelliMouse, the Microsoft IntelliMouse Explorer, whatever this damn thing's called? Do you think it's the fact that it's the laser mouse, or do you think it's something more...
I don't know. If you look, there are obviously different types of mice. Are you using auto and like the standard PS2, or are you using settings specifically for an IntelliMouse?
I think I tried both and had the same problem either way.
And the ultimate question, have you talked to God about it?
Well, of course, and he told me to call you, actually.
Google told you to call me?
He put me on hold and transferred me, yeah.
I must be special at Google.
Yeah, that's Google Labs aptitude test. We won't go into that again. We had a 2-hour conversation on that already today. Oh, man. Anyway, so, yeah, my meeting was really good, and that's pretty much my show until now. How did yours, I mean, did you go to your meeting? And
We don't have anything around here.
Yeah, I guess I should, I kind of knew that. Well, you know what, forget the meeting. I mean, it's been long.
How about we pimp that?
Well, I was going to say, it's been a long time since you've been on the show anyway. I mean, what have you been doing all this time, for God's sake?
Lots of porn, I mean, just a couple random projects. I mean, yeah, I've been away from the community completely for quite a while. Just sort of working on an Asterix project, getting to play with Asterix a bit, which is fun. I'm envious of Not Theory, bastard.
Yeah. Everybody's putting up an Asterix box these days.
It's the thing to do. It's the cool thing.
It is very cool.
Let's see, what else have I been doing? I've been getting some coding in. As sad as I'm going to be flogged for this, but I have been playing with...
Don't say the J word.
Dum-dum-dum, Microsoft Visual Studio .NET 2003.
Oh, no, that's all right. I'm going to flog you for that.
And I like it.
I thought you were going to say Java. I would have flogged you for that.
I'm a Java person.
I know you are, and I'm not.
Flog me for doing what I always do. Yeah, there you go. But I've been playing, I learned C#. I like the .NET platform. It's a cool idea. I know I should be flogged for it. Open source, woo, woo, woo. But
well, you can open source projects just because it's in their closed source environment.
Yeah, this is true. IDE is quite impressive. I'm trying to think of what else I've been doing. Again, a lot of porn.
You just had a big burst of static on your phone there, too. I don't know where that came from.
Oh, man. This is my lovely T720. I've bitched about that tons of...
Yeah, did I tell you I finally upgraded? I got the Motorola V600 now.
I bet your life is so much better.
I retired the T720. The T720i is now retired. And, yeah, this phone's been pretty good so far. I'm glad you brought that back up. I didn't mention that in my hacking stories. I might have mentioned that on a previous show, but... But so far, yeah, I'm pretty happy with this phone. It's the service, the carrier, I'm not real happy with. But you know what? It's for as little as I use it, and it's not really worth a it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Gets the job done. I got speakerphone and I got Bluetooth.
Gets the job done. Mine only gets about halfway there.
Yeah. Yeah. Static. Just as you said that too. How ironic.
But I think that's pretty much it. I haven't really been up to too much. Mostly I've been working on my personal things like music. I've been focusing on that, playing a whole lot more lately.
Oh, that's very cool, and we will make sure that we put those online for everybody. That is, if there's something you want to share, of course. But let's jump into the regular show topics tonight, and let's just pull out the shotgun, because I just got a lot of short topics, little things to talk about. A bunch of little things, a few little topics, and probably the biggest one. Let's start with, and let's make kind of the main topic, a little mini review of Firefox. And I know this is really unnecessary for a lot of people, because I know a lot of people are using Firefox already. You use Firefox regularly, correct?
Every day.
Yeah, I've abandoned everything else. I have IE, of course, because A, you can't get rid of it. You have no choice if you're using Windows OS. And B, I still have a couple things that only work in IE. And they're, of course, work-related, and I can't do anything about it. You know, it's out of my hands. But I have found a couple of plugins, a couple of things that only work in IE. And it's usually other Microsoft products, of course. So, that being said, I still am completely sold on Firefox. I made it my default browser quite a while back, and I use it for 99% of my web browsing nowadays. Now, I do have a couple of bugs that I found, and I'm a little bit disappointed. Tell me what you think of this. I found a couple bugs, and they're not... Like, you know, they're not severe, but they're annoying. And I went to actually report them. And I was a little bit, I don't know what the word is, disturbed, a little bit angry to find that if you want to report a bug, you actually have to register with them. I mean, I went to report the bug to try to help out and give back to them some of the bugs I found, and they want you to actually register with them to report a bug, and I didn't really care for that a whole lot.
No, I don't think I necessarily agree with it. I mean, in a way, it could be a good thing, but I don't think it should be a requirement.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, what actually ends up happening is I did not report my bugs. I'll mention them here on the air right now. I guess maybe I can do that, but they're not going to get back to them, really. I'm not sure why they would make you register with them to report a bug, I guess. I don't know why. I can't think of why they would make you register to report a bug. I just...
can give you mad props.
Yeah, right? That's not going to happen. Well, let me just share them with the world at large. Again, like I said, they're kind of minor, but they are things that I use a lot. Because one of the new features on Firefox that I really like is the Control-F. To use the Control-F to find something, on a phrase on the page. And this is something that I've always loved. I fell in love with this when it came with the Google toolbar in IE. It would allow me to highlight terms on the page. So I could type in something in the Google toolbar, like search for it through Google, which I do a lot, of course, with the toolbar. And if you have multiple terms, you can have them highlighted in different colors. You can click on the words in the toolbar, and it will go straight to it. Have you used those?
Yeah. Are you talking about the new search features in 1.0 beta?
Right, of Firefox. I was comparing them back to the old Google toolbar that plug in for IE.
I have actually never used the Google toolbar.
Okay. Well, see, it had a similar thing. Now, in the new one, you have the Control-F will automatically bring up a toolbar, a little tiny bar at the bottom of the screen in Firefox. And I'm saying, yeah, that's really something cool. I actually had a discussion on this at our last 2600 meeting about how I like the Google toolbar in IE and some of the features. And someone was arguing with me about, yeah, but there's a Google toolbar built into Firefox. Well, there is. There's a little tiny bar that'll let you search Google quickly, but it doesn't have all the other features like highlighting a word on a page. And I use that a lot because I do some pretty intense searching. I do some pretty complex searching, some Google hacking, whatever you want to call it, using a lot of their terms, and I want to be able to find specific things on the page. And sometimes I'll even use it to browse a data file and find something. You can type it into that Google toolbar, in IE that is, the plugin, and look for it on the page without actually going to Google Sites. So it actually serves a point of doing a find on a very large data file, for example. Well, that feature was not in Firefox's Google bar. I won't call it a toolbar, but the little Google search thing. You could click on it, select drop-down, select find on page, and then search that way, but it's not the same. You have to go through a lot of clicks to do that, and I don't really keep my hand on the mouse. I'm a keyboard. I know all the keyboard shortcuts. I don't really go to the mouse unless I have to. So, they added Control-F feature to Firefox, which is fantastic. And what it does, as soon as you hit Control-F, first of all, it's very intuitive, which I like about it. Very intuitive. All you got to do is hit Control-F, and it automatically pops up at the bottom. And you can start typing in whatever word you want to search for. And if it's not there, it'll kind of buzz at you and let you know that it's already not on the page. And if it is on the page, it'll jump to it, and you also have the Find Next and Find Previous buttons. And I believe it also has the highlight function, does it not?
Yes, it does.
Okay, so that's also something in the Google toolbar. If you had multiple words with the Google toolbar, you could even do them in multiple colors, so you could find each individual word on the page. I don't know if it does that. I don't think I've actually pushed that yet to see if it would do that. But highlighting one word is pretty useful to me anyway. I don't have to find all of them. And maybe that's something they can improve on in future releases. Just the fact that it exists is already very cool. But as far as bugs, I'll tell you, there's two bugs and related specifically to that. One is I found that it will not search inside of an embedded text box. I guess that's what you would call it. If you have text inside of a web page embedded in a web page with like a scroll bar.
Right. I've noticed that it won't search, depending on the type, it won't search inside of other frames.
Yeah. I don't know if
it depends on the frame, but like, for instance, mine won't search at Supernova unless I've actually clicked within the middle frame that has the list of files.
Yeah, I guess that probably makes sense. That's probably true of any of the browsers are probably like that. But a terms of service website where it says you have to scroll through the terms of service, click on I agree. when you try to search, if there's a word in that terms of service and you know it's there and you do the control find, it will not find it inside of that little embedded text box.
Is that after you put the cursor in that box?
I'm pretty sure I tried that, and yes, it still did not find it inside of the box.
In terms of service, were you searching for soul?
No, I was just making up an example. I don't remember exactly how I came across. I think I was actually looking at some source code that was embedded into a little text box so that it wouldn't execute.
Right.
So it was like scrolling through some source code. So, and I think I did a find on one of the terms or parameters or something, but I didn't want to use that as an example because it was kind of, I guess it was trying to make up a better example. So, and here's another weird, this is truly a bug, I think, because I ran into this one where, as a matter of fact, this confirms the highlighting that I was talking about. If you use the highlight, the highlight feature on that Control F find bar, if you do highlight the search terms on the page, okay, it'll highlight the word yellow, which again is a great feature and everything. You highlight the word, and when it's highlighted, you can no longer type over it or change it. And obviously, if it's a word on the web page, you can't change it anyway. But for example, go to Google right now. Those of you who are listening right now, go to Google and do a search for like digital dog pound, okay, or whatever. Then and get your results or whatever. And on the results page, go up and highlight the word dog. Go to the Control F toolbar, font, do your find, and type in DAWG. It'll highlight the word dog up in the little search page on Google. And let's say you suddenly changed your mind. You don't want digital dog pound, you want digital cat pound. I don't know what you want. And you try to type over the word dog while it's highlighted, it will not let you do it. Even though it is on a data entry field, you're allowed to type in that Google search thing. It will not let you do it if you've got the highlight turned on. Now, that's just a bug.
It's a feature.
Yeah, sure. See, I never know if you're even there anymore now.
I'll just randomly answer with
exactly
arbitrary comments that make no sense.
Oh, if the listeners only knew how much of an edited the show this ended up being. Oh, there's such a backstory there. Oh,
no,
man.
Kill a fucking user day sounds better and better.
Oh, the things we do to get you on the show, man. Oh, what else can we talk about in the Firefox mini review? The ad blocker extension, plug-in, whatever you want to call it, is incredible. Phenomenal.
Pop-up blocking in Firefox or even Firebird has always been nice.
Yeah, but the ad blocker itself, you can, the ad blocker plug-in, it automatically detects most advertisement, puts a little tab on it, that says ad block, a little transparent tab, and you can click on it, and you can block that ad from ever coming up again. Now, that's really cool just to see it work, but what really makes it fantastic is that it accepts wildcards. And most of these advertising companies, they're, you know, a .com, like, for example, DoubleClick.com. If you're getting an ad from DoubleClick.com and it's got a bunch of gibberish and random seed variables and blah, 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 .swf or .gif or whatever, you can block it individually or you can block DoubleClick.com/*. And you'll block anything from that site. You'll never see another ad from that site again. That's incredibly powerful. So, like, sometimes you can't do that. Uh-oh.
What?
Sometimes you can't do that, and sometimes you will accidentally block out real content if you do it too globally. But, for example, you'll find something like ads. You'll find a subdomain where they put all their ads, so you're like ads.yahoo.com. So you can safely block ads.yahoo.com/*, and you won't block out all the other Yahoo images at the same time. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of places use ads.yahoo.com. Or something along those lines, media dot, something like that. So you can block out subdomains using the wildcard. You can block out entire sites like DoubleClick, et cetera, et cetera. Or if they're all coming from a certain directory, you can block it out on a directory level with the wildcard. Just really, really powerful. The best ad blocking software I've ever seen on any platform, any browser, any kind.
Binrev.com/*.
Yeah, block it all, baby. And what else? Oh, there's also a cool extension for downloads. I don't know what the exact name of the extension is. I probably should have looked it up if I was a good show host, but I'm not. But they have a downloads extension that will basically let... It'll also put a little toolbar at the bottom of the browser. Because I don't really like the download manager very much. I mean, it's... It can get annoying sometimes. I like to know the status of things, and I don't have to keep going back and checking to the thing. And if you download a lot, you have to clean it up because it saves it. And yes, you can configure it different ways, but it's just too inflexible. This plug-in, what it does is it put a little bar at the bottom and puts a little graphical download meter. And it'll show you your bandwidth, what percentage done you are, so that you can keep right on browsing and know that your file's downloading, know when it's done, so you can switch over there and do whatever you want to do with it. That's another cool plug-in, and it's very, again, very intuitive, A, and B, very unintrusive. Sits down at the bottom of the screen. It doesn't take up much screen real estate. It's the cool thing about it, about Firefox, that is that if the feature's not there, which there's already a lot of great ones, people are writing some really good extensions for it that fill in a lot of the gaps that later go on to become part of the project sometimes. Yes?
I'm here. I was just had no feedback.
Oh.
Nothing to say to add to it.
I was just about to pause again. Thought we dropped you again. Oh, anyway. What else do we have? My Yahoo. Like I said, they're just going to shotgun some topics here. My Yahoo, the customizable Yahoo page, which is pretty much my home page. I customize it with all the news stuff that I wanted from sports scores and stuff from Yahoo. You know, not very demanding. They've changed their engine now, the way that they load content. They've always used their own news feeds, proprietary stuff. They pay for content from different providers. Well, now they're using RSS news feeds, and we've had an RSS episode before, really simple syndication. I wish I knew the number to tell you to go back and listen to it, but you can find it in the show notes. They're using RSS for their feeds now and allow you now to connect to any RSS feed out there and add it to your My Yahoo page. So that's really, really cool. I've added Root Secure. You know, Nick84 over there has got some RSS feeds on his site. That's very cool. I put those at the top. My 2600 page, for example, has stuff like that. You know, RSS, you have RSS on your site, don't you?
Nope, not yet.
Oh, I could have sworn I saw the...
on my site. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I could have sworn I saw the button for that on there.
Wait, we might actually have it. I don't do the development for it.
You don't even know that you have it on your own site?
I'm the admin, damn it.
Yeah, right? any RSS feed you can now add and put it on my Yahoo page, which is a really, really cool thing. My question, I'm kind of curious to see if, since Yahoo is using RSS news feeds now, I'm wondering if they're using it for their own internal news feeds, like their AP press feeds, their Yahoo headlines feeds, their other Yahoo content. I wonder if they're switching to RSS feeds themselves and feeding it to their own site. And if so, I wonder if I can kind of reverse engineer the code a little bit to take their RSS feeds and post them over on my site or over on another site, parsing through their XML. So that might make an interesting project.
Oh, and an update, yes, we do have RSS.
There you go.
Gotta love AIM.
Oh, let's see. What else? Okay, you know what? I got a couple articles here. Let me see how we're doing on time. It's kind of hard to tell with all that's been going on tonight. I have a couple things from... I just got my new Popular Science, October 2004... issue of Popular Science, and it had a couple articles in there I wanted to talk about. Nothing too in-depth, but... And I know you don't have this in front of you, so I'll kind of wing this a little bit. Like, I'm not already dominating the conversation anyway. You should just jump in once in a while.
Just make comments for me if I'm not there.
Okay, I don't know if I can mimic your
voice. You're great.
Yeah, you're awesome. You're my hero. let's see. There's two things in here, actually. I'll go through one quickly because I want to read a couple of these. It's a little... I don't know if this is a joke or if a... It's lighthearted, I'll say that. It's called 5 Things to Know Before Getting an RFID Chip Implant. RFID, of course, something we've talked about on the show many times. And these are five things to know before getting your RFID chip implant. Top five list, if you will. And basically, this is just their way of telling you some basic stuff about it. The first one says you'll hardly feel a thing. The chip is housed in a glass capsule the size of a grain of rice that is inserted just under your skin by syringe and removed with a tiny scalpel slice. Only massive blunt force trauma can shatter it. That sounds fun.
Yeah, just a little.
So they're going to put a little grain of rice in there with the RFID tag in it and whatever information, and a scalpel slice can take it out. So what's to stop? I mean, is there going to be like a rash of gang drive-bys where people slice your arm open and steal your RFID tag out of you?
Just cut off your whole arm.
Yeah. Yeah. Number two, there's no on-off switch. The chip is activated by a same brand RFID reader passing within 1 to 2 feet, but the only info stored on it is an ID number for a password-protected database to which you control access. So far, the chips lack GPS capability, so you can't be tracked. Yeah, about that. I don't really know how I feel about having any kind of database tied to an RFID tag, especially, like, this brings to mind the idea of using the same password for every single site that you go to. Using the same one password every time you go to a site is kind of like this RFID tag if it's tied to different databases. For example, you use an RFID tag in your arm that's going to identify, I think there's been talk of having your medical information. You go to the hospital, they can scan your RFID tag and know what allergies you have, what you're allergic to, etc. At the same time, you may be able to go to the place where you work. There's been ideas and comments of people using the chip to give you access to your place of business, for example, as a security measure. You have to have RFID tag that identifies you to come in. So, again, back to having the same password for multiple sites, you get that feeling of if you get someone's RFID tag through whatever means necessary, then you sure get a lot of access. And actually, I should have read number three here, because that's really what that says. It says, number three says, it can save your life. The database the chip is linked to can hold anything from your medical history to access rights for secure buildings. Exactly what I just said. A feature already being used by the Mexican government. Interesting. And number four is, or it can just get you drunk. The Baja Beach Club in Barcelona lets customers get chipped for $150. Bartenders scan implanted patrons' arms, to get their credit card info and to let them into the VIP lounge. Now, come on. Seriously. I mean, there's no way in hell I would tie a credit card to this thing. Absolutely no way. Because, again, it's too easy to lose or to have it stolen or any number of things go wrong with it. And it's tied to your credit card? That's just way, way, way too dangerous. Is it a little extreme to believe that would happen? Maybe so, but if these ever took off into the gross population, if they ever really became widely used, I guarantee you that is something that you would start to see happen. Absolutely would. And people would stalk and watch you to find out where your RFID works. They'd know where your credit card information is, and they would follow you and take advantage of it, or they would steal your chip somehow. I mean, the potential is just phenomenal. And number five is Fido is one step ahead of you. Verichip, the company that makes the only human implantable chips, has already put them in more than 30 million dogs, cats, livestock, and wild animals. Every month, about 6,000 lost pets are reunited with their owners when shelters scan the chips. Now that is a very cool use for RFID. That I support. I think that's a very cool thing, putting it into animals. But you know what? We're human beings. We're not animals. Well, I guess we're kind of, sort of an animal, but we don't need to be chipped because we get lost like an actual animal does. So that seems to be a little bit of, I don't know. you know, I'm all for convenience in life, and I wouldn't necessarily rule out having something like this done, even if it's just for the scientific study factor to see what I could do with it and if I could hack it or something like that, allowing this to be done. But I certainly wouldn't tie a lot of these things that they're suggesting people do with it. That really sounds dangerous. And, you know, if you are somebody that has, let's say, let's go back to the physical security thing. If you have physical security to a building, you suddenly become a target. Let's say you had physical access to the Twin Towers or something like that. Obviously a point of attack. They were, you know, speaking in past tense here, I guess. You had access to a building that somebody wanted to do something to, or access to a secured area that somebody wanted to break into. Well, they're going to be casing the joint, and guess what? They're watching and casing you. You're being stalked. The potential there is that you become a target for people who want to perform this kind of stuff. So that's a whole other scary aspect to the whole thing that I'm sure people probably haven't thought of yet. And, I mean, it's a very, very real possibility. So, you're ready to get RFID chip now, aren't you?
Definitely. I'm going to get it stuck right in my ass.
All right. Well, I don't know if it'd go all that far. Well, it is the size of a piece of rice. I guess you probably could put it anywhere, and that might prevent people from stealing it like I might have suggested, because I'm sure not going down there for it. But that's just my preference. And let's see, one other story. I have a bunch of small topics. Let's just do one or two more of them quickly. One more from this Popular Science, and then I'll probably start wrapping it up. And this one was a section called, Is Linux Ready for You? Geeks have loved it for years, but the open source OS alternative finally... But is the open source OS alternative finally easy enough for the rest of us? And quickly, what this basically did is broke Linux down by three price points, if there were such a thing. Low-end being a free distro, medium range, and then a high-end distro. And on the low-end, they referred to SUSE 9.1. That's the one they recommended. Said it was very good, gave it a lot of good comments. Without going into too much detail, they just talked about what it came with, OpenOffice, Adobe Acrobat, blah, 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 and some of that kind of stuff, and the support that, again, most of our listeners know. So that's on the low-end. And on the medium range, they mentioned Zandros 2.5, Linux in a box, they refer to it, which apparently is $89. That used to be Caldera, is that correct?
Oh, really?
I think that's the one that used to be, is it? No, not Caldera, I'm sorry, Corel?
Okay, yeah.
Didn't Corel have it?
I thought Caldera was purchased, or at least owned originally by SCO. Dum, dum, dum.
Ah, there you go. That's right. I had the name wrong. I think it was Corel. Didn't Corel try to make a Linux at one point? And
they did.
I guess it became this. And basically, what they mentioned on this one and what made it different was that it's $89. It's a shrink-wrapped package that you can buy off the shelf. And they gave it good reviews as well. They said that it came with a lot more software in the package, came with more stuff on CD ready to go out of the box. Not to mention, it also came, I think it was 90-day support or 60-days, limited tech support out of the box as well. So, of course, they gave it some points for that because, again, the question is it ready for the rest of us, the typical user, and support is something that, you know, new users to Linux are going to need. So, is it worth $89? You know, that's debatable again. And on their high end, they're expensive. They actually talked about the Walmart box that comes preloaded with Linspire, formerly Lindos. And they talked about how you can buy a box from Walmart that already comes pre-installed with Linspire, which is, I guess, a Linux distro. However,
yeah.
I can't say enough bad things. I mean, I hate Linspire worse than I hate Microsoft because they're trying to charge for something that's free and it's not good, and it's...
I'll give them that they do charge, but, for instance, their annual price to download packages, which still is ridiculous, but it's only like $5 or $10. It's not bad.
Well, I don't know. Let me. I'll read you some of the numbers here that they claim. Again, I don't know for sure because I wouldn't use it. I actually want to try it just to see if it's really, I'm missing something, but I doubt it. But they basically roasted because it said that they did try to charge for every little thing that you needed or try to download it, et cetera, et cetera. And they even actually told people not to go with this. They actually recommended against it. This is Popular Science. They're usually pretty open-minded, and they actually recommended that people just get SUSE 9.1 for free or some other free distro, and instead of buying this box preloaded with Linspire, they said put a couple $100 extra into it for a faster machine and download the free version, you know, and avoid Linspire completely. Now, in the article itself, let's see. It choked on a simple Word file saying I needed an Excel-compatible program that was for sale on Linspire's website for $75. Then it suggested I sign up for a $5 per month membership to get software in the future. Oh, and if I wanted to run Windows programs, that would be another $90. So, yeah, they basically roasted it, saying that it's ridiculous. They wanted money for every little thing. If you wanted the same functionality that you could have gotten for free with SUSE 9.1 or any number of other distros, of course, but in this article, SUSE 9.1 Personal Edition.
Well, with any of the new free, well, any free Linux that has a decent package management system that handles dependencies on its own, yes, I know Red Hat was nice back in the day, but Debian's apt, or dare I say, Portage, my first and only love, I mean, there's no real reason to to pay for these, especially with Linspire, because that's what you're paying, that $5 per month. It's basically the ability for you to do apt-get and get their customized packages.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, apt is the way to go. So, yeah, it's Linspire's just not a...
Not that I've used it. We had a client who was using it just to cover my own ass on that one.
Sure, right, whatever. I'll do one more little quick thing here. A cool website that I found is called Clusty.com. Clusty. Clusty, like Krusty the Clown. Clusty the Clown. Clusty.com. New search engine supposedly to compete with Google. Of course, every search engine says that. Every search engine comes out and says, yeah, we're going to compete with Google. We've got blah, blah, blah. Well, this one I thought was really cool, and I've talked about the same people that made this made another engine called Vivissimo, which I had mentioned on a show a long time ago, and how much I liked that, Vivissimo being a clustering engine. And I've liked it. I still use it to this day, Vivissimo. And it's not really a search engine. It's a clustering engine, Vivissimo, that is, where, and I'm just kind of reminding people, what it did that was different and that I liked was it searched multiple search engines, brought all the results back to Vivissimo, and then clustered them together by topic. So it helped you refine broad searches more easily. You know, you can find things tied to a topic a little bit easier and threaded, I don't know if that's a good way to describe it or not, but threaded search results. So I always liked the clustering aspect of Vivissimo, but again, it was getting results from Google and from AltaVista and from all these other search engines out there and clustering those together. Well, the same people that made that have now made this engine, again, Clusty.com, Clusty. And if you go out there and use it just a couple times, you'll realize that it's very similar to Vivissimo in that it clusters the results, and I've always liked that. However, the difference is that the Clusty search engine seems to be its own true search engine now. So they've made their own search engine powering with clustered results. So instead of clustering other people's and other search engines' results, I guess they realized how successful that was and what a good idea it was, and now they've made their own engine. And, yeah, I mean, quite frankly, it did give me as many hits or pretty darn close to as many hits as Google. I didn't actually do a one-to-one comparison to see if there was the exact same number, but most search engines these days are pretty darn close to each other. Really, it's all about delivery, though.
True. This is actually kind of cool. I've never used it, but I'm using it right now, and I do like the way it groups the results.
Yeah, I like the clustering because it helps you then focus things down, because even if you've got a precise search term, you still may get an overwhelming number of hits on it. So, gosh, I can't make up an example off the top of my head, but you may find your search term is surprisingly associated with their lyrics in a song, for example, and you didn't even know that when you went searching.
Well, this is actually funny that you say that. The first thing I searched for was the word asterisk, or were the words asterisk security. The fifth hit on this, or the fifth group, is Microsoft.
Yeah, so if you were looking for asterisk security, and as it relates to Microsoft, you click on that cluster, and now you've got much more precise hits. So that's what's cool about it. I think that's a really cool engine, and I'm going to start using it a little bit. I don't know if it's going to replace Google or anything, but I might start trying it more often. I still, like I said, I go to Vivissimo when I want to see what kind of... The other thing about the clustering engine is I like to see how it clusters sometimes. I'll do a vanity search on Vivissimo and now on Clusty to see what they have StankDog associated with. You know? If I see StankDog in a cluster called Binary Revolution, hey, that's great. You know, that's cool. I'm on there. You know, my name's probably all over the damn thing. If I see it under, I don't know, Clown Erotica, and there's 14 hits with the word StankDog, wait a minute. Something's fishy here. That wasn't supposed to get out. I mean, that wasn't supposed to exist.
Well, this is actually kind of cool, the fact that you can expand upon one of the groups and then have subgroups, and you can get, for instance, let me go back to asterisk security real quick. You can press the expansion link beside, say, social security, what the hell? for instance, voice over IP, and then you get other subgroups, and these are expandable, like at VoIPinfo.org. You can expand those even further. This is actually kind of nice. I think I'm in love.
Yeah, it's like browsing through your results instead of digging through your results, you know? It's kind of cool. So why don't we end on that note? That's a good note. That's a cool site for everybody to check out. Again, clusty.com, clusty.com. So go check it out. And let's jump into shout-outs. I already started, so let me go ahead and finish. I gave shout-outs, of course, to Acidus for reasons mentioned earlier. Shout-outs to El Diablo. Again, thank you for coming to our meeting, giving a very cool presentation. And I'm going to return the favor this weekend, for him down in Miami. And shouts out to Disposable, and he knows why. So what do you got? What kind of shouts you got?
Shouts to anybody who makes it to Freaknik in 2 weeks. We got, for last year, it's going to be nice. People flying in.
People picking us up.
Yes, this is the Voodoo Howl chauffeur service.
Exactly.
I guess that's it. I don't really talk to anybody or done anything.
Yeah, but hopefully that's going to change. You know, you had business things to take care of and life things. You kind of temporarily unplugged, and we're plugging you back in, whether you like it or not. You are back in. Feedback. You got an email for us, send it to radio@binrev.com. And
send to stinkdog@binrev.com.
Yeah, and closing music tonight is from Ming and FS. It's called Hijack the Disco. Little breakbeat track, a little techno breakbeat deal. And that is going to do it. So, I'm going to close up the show because I've got so incredibly much editing to do on this episode of the show. We might as well explain, because it's going to be pretty spliced together. In case people are wondering why we're laughing so much at the beginning and why we were so disoriented during this show, is because someone, one of the two of us, I won't say who, but someone was at work recording this, which has never been a problem in the past. But for some reason today...
I love customers.
Yeah. On that note, we're going to tell everybody that we will see them next week, same hack time.
Same hack channel.
Yo, Miami perverted my ass. For real. 1-2-1-2, you on that track.
Turn it up. Zulu.
Yeah.
It's on you.
Soup MCTC is on. It's a pioneer.
Come on.
Hi, bring it.
manifest.
Yeah.
Junkyard. Straight out of hipster massive.
Come on.
That straight up junk out your yard.
Yeah. Come on.
We got the time to make you move your feet. Every day, 7 days a week. The junk gotta make you reach your peak. Singing FS, yo, drop that beat.
Come.